Good afternoon and welcome to Time Out. It is 5:01 p.m. in beautiful downtown Carrboro, North Carolina. You're listening to WCOMLP, your community station. And this is Bill Hendrickson, your host of Time Out. And if you've listened before, you know that Time Out has informative conversations with persons of note, persons with fascinating careers, authors of interesting and important books or articles, leaders promoting important issues, leaders of our communities, and others who will allow you to invest an hour of your time and get a guaranteed valuable return. And today we have somebody with us who combines a lot of these things I mentioned, persons of note, persons with fascinating careers, authors of interesting and important... Wow. I'm talking with, as you noted in my announcement, Wizard Baldur, also known as John Troy. And welcome, sir.
Greetings.
And it's nice to have you sitting across the table here from me. I wish our audience could see you. If you don't know John Troy, he's a man of beautiful visage. He's a lovely long white beard, and his hair is tied in a little knot at the top of his head. And he looks the part of a wizard. I think it's great that you have now defined yourself.
Yes.
A lot of people have known you for a long time, and maybe they didn't know you were a wizard, and now that you've come out of the closet, here you are.
Yes.
John is a native of Durham and grew up in the area, went to school in Durham, and had various interesting youthful careers, one of which was a music studio.
Yeah, it was Soundhouse. It was Troy Stereo prior to being Soundhouse.
Okay. And that went for a while until you finally closed that down and...
I sold it. My partner and my ex-wife took it.
Oh, okay. I think I have met your ex-wife, have I not?
Ann.
Yes. Well, it's nice to have John here. I have his book in front of me, which I printed out. He also is... We might as well talk right now about the book. Before we get into the details of it, tell us how we can find the book and where we can buy it, our listeners.
Best place is online now. If you go to my website, which is thewizardllc.com, you'll see a little place that says buy this book, and you can click and purchase online right there. Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble and Borders will be having it available for order, not a stocking item.
All right. I want you to listen to this because I've seen the picture of the book. What I'm reading is a printout that he sent me, a pre-publication. I printed it off on my computer. But on his website, there's a lovely picture of the book, and I know that it will sell. So let's start. What prompted you to write a book?
Folks are longing for peace.
To what?
Peace.
Peace. Okay.
Folks are longing for peace. There's a lot of confusion about religions and believing and folks are looking for their center. They're looking for... the place that's home. And there's so much confusion about who we are, what we are, afterlife scenarios, that I felt called to edify what we know about faith and belief and wisdom and peace.
The title of his book, by the way, is Wisdom's Soft Whisper, which I think is a very appropriate title for the kind of message that you're trying to extend to us. And you're kind of a man of vision. Would it be fair to say that?
Yes.
And if in reading the book, it seemed to me, as you just now described your motivation, it seemed to me that you did include in the book a lot of your vision, and there's an awful lot in this. His book is interesting because he's got, how many chapters? 20-some chapters, maybe 30 chapters, and John's wisdom is on usually only on one or two pages of the chapter, and then he follows it up with quotations from other wizards, I guess you would say.
Wisdom of the ancients, I call it.
Okay, wisdom of the ancients. And you're a man with the wisdom of the youth, is that it?
It's all the same wisdom.
it's all the same wisdom, okay. By the way, you can call into this conversation and ask John questions or make comments at 929-9601 if you are out of the area. You stick a 919 in front of it, 929-9601. This station, WCOM, as you know, is supported by our community of people here in Carrboro and Chapel Hill. It's supported by people all over the world who listen to our program on communityradio.coop, and we have support. This station is underwritten by two companies in New York State, which I'll tell you about later. So feel free to talk to John about wizardry. Let's talk about a few things in your book. You say in your introduction, you talk about words and wisdom. You say we are creatures who using words to express knowledge, but you seem to say that wisdom reaches farther than mere words. Tell me, you come at a lot of the physical part of our life in your book, and so words being one thing.
Yeah, words are used as, you know, a word is a word. If you consider the word water just for a moment.
All right.
And water doesn't say itself that it's water. We have a word that means water, but the word water isn't water. And the word water will not quench thirst. There's a little saying in Ram Dass's book, Be Here Now, painted cakes do not satisfy hunger. So words can point and insinuate, but the word isn't what it's referring to. You take your own name, for instance, or take this table, for instance.
Okay.
The word T-A-B-L-E, the table. Then take it a little deeper and consider the word I.
Yes, all right. Consider the word I.
The word I and even the mental word I that dwells in that headspace that's right where I, me, my, mine are, all there in one little bundle. And when you look at that, it's still just a word. And the real I is inexpressible.
Okay, but tell me, if the words, you're not saying they don't matter. I'm not quite sure what you're saying. You say water is, the word water doesn't quench your thirst. Okay, I understand that, but water quenches my thirst. So
yes.
So where is, where do I stop using words and deal with reality?
There's a point where we identify with the I, this word I, in the middle of the mind.
All right.
And then we tie thoughts and thoughts and thoughts and more thoughts and more thoughts until it becomes a bundle called the mind. And then we believe that the mind is who we are. But the mind is insentient. It's observed, but it is not the real I. The real I is that within which the word I surfaces. And I is the first thought.
Okay, I'm trying to focus on this. So I is the first thought, but is I me?
The word I is just the word I.
All right. And we don't need the word. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Well, John, it's a struggle trying to keep up with you, but I'm glad we're having this conversation.
Yeah, the word I, when you can observe a thought,
yes,
then the mechanisms that you have already begun to separate from identification with that the I thought has begun. Sooner or later, the realization that the I is not the thought I, but that which witnesses the thought I, is who we are.
Okay, that's taking it to its natural beauty, I guess. Then, and it's the that was say that again about the witnessing the thought.
Yeah, when there's a thought, there's a witness to the thought.
All right.
The witness to the thought is ever silent, always, but it's a witness. That witness notices the thought I. The thought I is not the witness. The thought I is not permanent. The thought I comes and the thought I goes.
So what's permanent? Then, if that's thought, the thought I is not permanent, so what is permanent?
That which witnesses the thought I.
And so that which witnesses the thought I. That which witnesses the thought I. I quite don't quite get the meaning of that.
You have you talk to yourself in your head.
Yes, I talk to myself in my head.
Who are you talking to?
I'm talking to myself.
And who is that?
That is I.
Oh, you've got an I talking to an I?
I guess so.
Really, consider that. Is there an I talking to an I, or is there an I talking to a listener?
And you're defining me in dualship there as the talker and the listener?
Yeah.
Aha. All right.
No need to talk to yourself.
Uh-huh. Okay, now let's move on. You know, I'm still on the first page of the introduction to your book. We may get to page two before it's over. Anyway, you also say the first sections of the book are thoughts of the thoughtless from the truth of our oneness. I've heard a lot of people talking about the fact that there's oneness, that we're all connected worldwide, but including animal, vegetable, and mineral. But if we're oneness, why don't we act in unison? What is it? What disrupts our oneness?
Nothing. The oneness is ever present. We lose cognition of it by falling asleep and going into the daydream and believing that the daydream is mortal and real. And then out of fear, we start to protect that bundle of memory because it sees its destiny as death and it can't get out. It's
okay.
Trapped.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a rational statement. Yeah, I think that's helpful. You also talk a lot in your book, and I heard you talk before about the importance of silence. And we should probably at least be having this hour on with nothing.
Well, silence is the paper life is written on.
Silence is the paper life is written on, okay?
So the silence is ever present. Its constancy is the reason we don't notice it, because it's ever present. It's the blackboard everything is written on. And the silence is who we are. The blackboard is who we are. The theater is who we are, not what's appearing in the theater.
All right. I'm beginning to understand your motivations for the book and the other things that you're saying, and I think it's all... I hope that people do buy your book, your book would be an interesting document for people to have in these little conversational salons that folks have. And maybe you can distribute, you know, the Ootney Reader magazine, have you read that?
I'm familiar with it, yes.
Promotes salons. And when we were living in New Jersey, we participated in a few of those. And a book like this would be a very good tool for people to use as a textbook, even though you may not want it to be called a textbook. But I kind of think it is. I think I said in my note to you that it seems in many ways to be a text, because you talk about magic, you talk about mystery, you talk about practice, you talk about perfection. You have a lot of our words, if you'll excuse me for saying the word words, but a lot of our realities are covered in your thoughts.
Exactly. Reality is covered in words and thoughts and concepts and imagination, like a veneer. And real insight, real vision is not a hallucination. It's not a form or conjuring. Real vision is seeing through the daydream to, in a sense, have the state of dreamless sleep while you're completely awake in the awake stage. And then when you recognize dreamless sleep, then you see the paper that life's story is written upon, which is our true self. And that is what is referred to as the sixth sense.
Yeah, you have a chapter on
that. Extrasensory perception. It's eternal, it's ever-present, and it's non-physical. And the recognition of who we are from the voice in our head, and then that paradigm shift to being the silence, to being the nothing, brings a sense of immortality to our existence.
You say we're still in the early part of the book, which we won't cover much of it because it's too long. It's not long, but there's too much of value here to. We ought to continue this for about 3 weeks in a row. You say wisdom is transparent and eternal. Knowledge is but a veneer of alphabets and concepts over reality, but wisdom is transparent and eternal. Now, your title of your book is The Whispers of Wisdom. Wisdom, soft whisper.
Yeah. Wisdom means the domicile of the wise. And it is the theater, the great theater. And there's if you were to consider real faith, for instance, not faith as a theistic meaning and not faith in something, but just pure faith. Pure faith tells you that every action is perfect if it's thy will be done.
You say that in your book. You have a chapter on faith.
Yes.
You also have a chapter on belief, and you contrast the two as unrelated, I guess.
Well, belief, as Alan Watts said, is the antithesis of faith. Belief is a system of thoughts and ideas deeply impressed in the mind. Faith is a total acceptance of what is considered to be God's will or thy will in every aspect.
Well, you say faith is the surrender.
It's the surrender and acceptance. Belief is a concepts and words and ideas and make believe.
You say in your book, your chapter on belief, by the way, the title of the chapter on belief is Believe Not. I guess he's telling us right there at the top of the page, don't be a believer. You say, as an example, consider a belief like reincarnation. With all due respect, reincarnation is just a belief. Beliefs are constructs of the mind, which you said earlier. Who reincarnates anyway? Okay. Well,
just more imagination.
How does some of this relate to theological teachings?
Theology are systems and ideas usually built around realizers through the ages, and theologies are different ways with words to express that which is inexpressible. The essence of theologies are the same. How the theologies are expressed differ depending on the culture and the time and the people and its response to current events. So one theology might be good in one part of the world and another or time in history and another something completely different. But theologies are mental constructs. It's not faith. Theology, you can join a theology, but the truth is unjoinable because one already abides in that. It just takes a paradigm shift or a recognition.
You talk a lot about paradigm shifts. Can you explain to me, to our vast listening audience, how you define that and how that affects us?
Let's say you walk in a dark room, and the first thing you see is a snake coiled up in the corner across the room.
All right.
So you go sit in a corner and look over there and wait and see what happens to that snake. But if you turn on the light, and you go, aha, it wasn't a snake. It's just a coil of rope. And then the fear is gone.
All right.
Likewise, in this daydream we're having, it seems really real, like the coil of rope appeared as a snake, and there was fear. So in this drama of life,
okay,
it's so seductive, and it pulls our attention in till we really believe it. And then it's like when you have a nightmare. You're really in it, and sometimes it's difficult to get out of it. But you do wake up. It is not real. You do wake up.
Okay, and there's
only good news.
And that's the paradigm shift.
And that's the paradigm shift from a mortal, encapsulated being to non-physical, immortal existence right now. Jesus says the kingdom of God is at hand.
Right.
Right now.
You quote a lot of interesting other wizards in your book, from biblical sources and from Albert Einstein, and you have Walt Whitman, and you have a number of Indians. You're very much involved. Change the subject a bit. You're very much involved with the teachings of various people in India in that culture. Tell me about that relationship and how you developed that.
Well, initially, I think I was introduced to Eastern culture through a publication called Be Here Now by Ram Dass.
That was a long time ago.
30 years ago.
Yes, you mentioned that in the early part of your life.
Yeah, 35 years ago. And
this is the anniversary of your 70th birthday this year.
Yes.
You're catching up with some of us, John. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt, but let's keep going.
Okay. But when I read the book, I had a spontaneous event where I put on a pair of headphones, and headphones were unique at the time, and the sound was in the middle of your head where that narrator eye hangs out.
And, the narrator eye, yeah, you talk about the narrator eye.
And I was listening to a record album by the Moody Blues, A Question of Balance, and I closed my eyes and spontaneously my attention turned in to the middle of my head, and there was a river of light I had never experienced before, and I seemed to be being pulled up in the river of light to its source.
You were totally awake. You weren't having a near-death experience.
It was more than awake. And it's when my sense of being, of the narrator, I reached the point, the source, everything imploded. And everything was gone. The room was gone. Everything around me was gone, and I was in space, and my sense of being was like a gigantic bell, the resonance of a gigantic bell, very sustained. And then I was pure sound, and then it went to nothing, and then the sense of being was completely self-absorbed to where all otherness was completely obliterated. And what I can remember the effects of going in and out, but the actual experience of a total absorption is unknowable. The mind can't go there. But there is a subtle taproot of intuition when I resume my awareness in the room. There was a small girl sitting on the sofa, and when you
became back to reality, you mean?
Yeah,
all right.
There was a small girl on the sofa, and my sense of being, that narrator I, was gone in my head. So, being was non-local, and when I looked into her eyes, there existed a continuum that went through, and it was silent and pure. And she was transparent, and I was transparent, and there was only one and two forms arising within the same one. And I was up all night with it. When the sun came up the next day, the sun came up in that greater self. Everything was occurring within that self that was non-local.
That's some experience. You're reliving it as you're describing it.
And I didn't know what it was or what had happened. I started reading the books in the back of Be Here Now, and I ultimately shared it with my then father-in-law, Milam Gowing, and he framed it up in traditional Christian terms, mainly out of the book of Revelation.
Well, you said in your book that you studied Revelation with your father-in-law after
yes.
you had been converted through Ram Dass's book.
Yes.
So that was a major whatever the word is, in your life. I mean, that...
It was everything in the blink of an eye. Literally.
And thoughts and actions and the environment of living since then are on that same track?
My journey has been with remarkable men and women who have reflected that truth back to me where it is shared. And the affirmation that comes from that has been my journey. It's taken more than three decades just to be able to express it in what little way that's possible.
Well, I think you're expressing it very beautifully, and you did in your book, and you are today. It's 5:30. We usually take a break on this show at 5:20, but we've babbled on here. It's 5:30. We'll take a short break. I want to mention, however, that this program is underwritten by two music organizations. One is Hot Diggity Dog Music in upstate New York, Hot Diggity Dog Music. composes, entertains, and sells music specifically written for preschool children. And you can go to the website of hotdiggitydogmusic.com and you can find out how to buy some of these great tunes for your children or grandchildren. The other underwriter that we have, I'll say them both in the same breath here, is Life of the Party. Life of the Party is a CD program that you can get by going to cherrylane.com/Life of the Party, and you will learn how to play the piano all by yourself if you get Life of the Party. So I'm thankful for these underwriters. We at this station are thankful for the support that we receive from the community, from members of our business community, from individuals. I have checks that I've received from other parts of the country. This is not just a Carrboro station. It is a worldwide community station, and we're able to talk with people like Wizard Baldur, who is sitting across the table from me this afternoon, and we'll get back to him in just a minute. I'll play a tune, and then we'll be right back. We're listening to a little gypsy music, but we're not talking with a gypsy. We're talking to Wizard Baldur, also known as John Troy, who is giving us the benefit of an hour of his wisdom. His book is Whispers of Wisdom's
Wisdom Soft Whisper.
Whisper, keep that word soft out of it. Wisdom Soft Whisper. And after listening to this brief conversation, I'm sure that anybody listening to the radio today would love to buy his book. And give us that website again.
It's thewizardllc.com.
Thewizardllc.com. And it's also available through Amazon, and will be available at the online Barnes & Noble and Borders. So I know you'll want to go out and buy. I'm going to buy several copies and give it to people. My daughter, who is the founder of one of my underwriters, Hot Diggity Dog Music, is going to just absolutely devour this book. And the next time she's in town, she lives in New York State, I'll have her chance to meet you, because All right. She would really appreciate that. You talk about so many things in your book. You say every action is perfect. Now, tell me how I can believe that.
It takes faith.
Okay, faith. Well, we're back to that again. All right.
Faith tells you that every action is perfect. It's if thy will be done is really true, then that means that every action is perfect, and that it's all the play of God, every bit of it. Every tiny little bit, every little bug, every hair, everything said, thought, done, reflected upon is all perfect. And we have those times in life where we have a few seconds where it's all falling together and it's so perfect that it just could, you just can't believe that this is happening. And it's referred to as synchronicity.
Yes.
And then you're getting just a little taste of that perfection. If you look at that synchronicity close enough, that synchronicity could not have occurred without everything before aligning just perfectly to come to that point.
I'll read a paragraph from your chapter on Every Action is Perfect. The first paragraph, and I'm quoting, says, "For wizards, life is all the play of consciousness. In other words, it is all thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven," which you just mentioned. "Thy will is perfectly free will. Critical insight reveals thy free will does not suffer the dilemma of apparent choice. It simply is without any obstruction whatsoever. That means that every action is perfect, no exceptions." Ponder further. I've often said in my conversations with people that nothing is perfect.
That's the way it appears. That's the illusion.
Go ahead. That is the illusion that nothing is perfect, but yeah. In your book you say every action is perfect.
Every action is perfect. And if one subscribes to that, then it puts the narrator, I, out of a job. There's nothing to do, nothing to second guess, nothing to plan about, nothing to think about. It starts getting quiet because it's all unfolding perfectly. It's a light show. This unfolding and gives the illusion of time, gives the illusion of mortal bodies, gives the illusion of birth and death, that we are seduced into so deeply. But when we wake up, then we see the rope and not the snake. We see the benign quality of life.
You say in the same chapter, synchronicity will enjoin you and you will discover wisdom. Regrets vanish. Worries cease. All is as it should be.
Yes.
That is a masterful concept for us to try to achieve.
It's not a concept. It points to peace.
All right, which is what you said way in the beginning of this show, is when that's why the book is written.
It's for peace of mind.
Awareness is in the now is, that's italicized, awareness in the now is the native state of being, and everything you perceive is like a passing dream in this awareness, the peace of God. Well, you say it right there. I think you're asking us to strive to leap from our life into a whole new sense of awareness.
No striving required. It's already the case.
Well, then there's maybe no striving, but there has to be an acceptance.
Yes. And then the more one accepts, the more synchronicity, the more the revelation, the more transparent the revelation. Revelation means the unveiling who we really are. And that's what poets write to, messiahs come and talk about, and musicians play the music of, and
of who we really are.
Of who we really are.
Okay.
That joy, that peace.
You also have a chapter on ESP. You mentioned that earlier in the sixth sense.
Yeah.
You say the same is so with the five senses. The sixth sense is the self. The sixth sense is the only true sentient sense. It is self-aware, like an unbroken thread of intuition. The other senses are strung on it.
Yeah. And that sixth sense, the self, is what folks call God.
Well, now, that's...
That's really intimate.
That's not a theological statement.
No. But and the word God is just a word. But that silence, that peace that passes understanding, when Jesus said, "Be still and know I am God," that was an instruction. He wasn't bragging.
Okay, yep, that's true. That's true. He wasn't bragging. He was speaking it to his disciples, I guess.
And said, "Be still and know I am God," for yourself.
Very, very profound, John. Very profound. We're talking with the wizard Baldur. The name Baldur you acquired from, tell me what you...
In Nordic mythology, there's a Baldur who's the son of Odin, and that's where the name Baldur.
This is a recent addition to your name, I guess, since with the book. Is that it? Or have you been doing the wizard Baldur for a while?
For a while... years ago, a friend of mine, Philip Rigo, was working on a musical drama called The Prince and the Wizard, and he asked me to help develop the character of the wizard, so that's where the nickname came from. And it's also where the title, Wisdom Soft Whisper, comes from.
That's a beautiful title, Wisdom Soft Whisper. We have a few more minutes, maybe about 15 minutes, with the wizard. One thing you might know or not know about him is that over the years he created a very interesting and successful business, making sauces, dressings, and assorted, I guess, basically liquid type products, which he sold in supermarkets, Whole Foods. He has all kinds of different labels. Tell me, you mentioned in the early part of your life you were living in the mountains with your grandmother, who taught you a lot about natural herbs and things of that sort. And you also spent a lot of time in Jamaica with your group down there, particularly with this person who was so close to you, Jamesy. Is that some of the inspiration that got you into the making of these sauces?
I love to eat and I love to feed people. So, and my grandmama up in Waynesville in the mountains, that's where I spent my summers growing up. And she had a wood cook stove and a farm, and we milked the cow and shuck the corn. And
so you learned real native farming that in those
carried
days.
The slop bucket to the chickens. And,
uh-huh.
And so yes. And I've always loved the food and preparing food. When I met Jamesy, that was a situation where we lived completely in the wild. And there was no money or stores or any place to go buy anything. And Jamesy would bring in food from the wild and prepare it. And so I learned a whole new way of eating and cooking and an appreciation for the earth providing incredible, nutritious foods for us to eat. And I've loved being in the food business. It's been a real inspiration.
You're not in it now. You've sold your business to some capitalists. Do you miss it?
No, it's growing. It's like having a kid grows up and you know, it's graduated from school and it's out and it'll grow and be what it'll be.
Well, when you started your business, I've certainly used a lot of your products, and they're wonderful. But how did you create? I think you had a hot sauce was the first one you mentioned, and then you created Simply Delicious, which was a dressing. How did you know how to mix the items in these products to make it work?
It's just a knack I've got. It's like asking how do I see? It, you know, folks have gifts and knacks, and that's a strange little knack I've got. and I can put stuff together to make it taste good. And
well, it sure does taste good.
And one of the ideas that's multiplexed onto these food products is that they're delicious delivery systems for all the nutraceuticals and foods that enhance good health. So whether it's apple cider vinegar or honey or ginger or miso or garlic, all of these in little portions every day in the form of dressings and condiments enhance health. They're good for you.
Well, I certainly can support that because we use a lot of your products, and so far I'm able to continue to put one foot in front of the other. But I've been to your the Wizard's Cauldron, by the way, is the name of his former company in Yanceyville, North Carolina, and he very kindly arranged for my wife and myself to have a tour a few years ago, and I was impressed with the large bags of spices from all over the world in that place.
Yes.
A big project of finding the right spices in the right countries and having them imported to the U.S. That's a trick.
Yeah, it's over 500 different ingredients, organic, certified organic ingredients from around the world.
500 different ingredients.
Yes.
Wow. Well, that's a testimony to your faith in what you were doing.
It just happened. My journey feels more like Forrest Gump going through all of it.
Well, you've had quite a journey, and we're
very fortunate.
I'm very honored to have this conversation with you, John, because I've known you for a while, kind of on the periphery, but in reading the book and getting to have this more intimate conversation is revealing. I have a little note here on my chapter heading is Turning Inside Out. I have a little note I wrote to myself. How can we discover wisdom? How can we discover wisdom? This, you say in this chapter, this wisdom, this sixth sense, is who you always already are. Stillness, the peace that passes understanding. That's your message, isn't it?
Yeah, it's you experience it every day. It's just that you're not cognizant of it. It's dreamless sleep. Dreamless sleep, the I thought has disappeared, and it comes back. And to be consciously aware of that breaks through the dream. It gives the dream a transparent quality, and there's a paradigm shift to non-physical and non-local that's powerfully liberating. And it reveals the perfection. It's a light show. There's an incredible perfection. Yeah.
Well, you talked about your conversion after you read Ram Dass's book, but you're still living on this planet. You're still putting one foot in front of the other and turning the lights on and off and getting in a car. And next week you're going on a nice cruise. How do you relate the wisdom that you have and this peace and stillness with everyday commotion?
You go with what wants to happen. You accept life and go with it. And by being in the here and now, your attention is free. And there's actually more functionality without the thoughts clouding your view, and things turn out all right.
Okay, well, so you're living a life of acceptance.
Acceptance and faith.
And faith.
And not, it's not a theology, but it's trusting the mystery. I put a capital M on the mystery that's unfolding, and I trust it. I really do.
Well, I can see how you do, and you have developed that lifestyle. I've been fortunate enough to be at John's home in Northern Orange County. It's so far north that his phone number begins with a 336. You do have a circle of friends, people that you care for and that care for you, and you've developed this this relationship of a number of people. When I first met you in a hotel room somewhere in I don't know where it was,
Myrtle Beach,
I guess. You had people there who didn't say much and were kind of didn't have any personality as far as I was concerned. But I've gotten to know them, and now I realize that there's value there, and that's all part of your feeling of love and affection.
Yes.
And you're to be congratulated for feeling that way. We're about through talking with John Troy. I want you to all realize that his book is available at Wizard LLC. The Wizard, is that it?
That's correct.
TheWizardLLC.com. It's also available at Barnes & Noble and Borders and Amazon. Wisdom's Soft Whisper, a very nice title. Now, we only have a few more minutes. See what else I want to... I have my notes here. How to avoid words. Well, we covered that earlier. We're not going to go back into that again. You did a lot of research because you have a lot of quotations here, including several from my wife's father, J.B. Ryan.
Yes.
Which is encouraging. I want to read... Oh, yes. I'd like you to read that. That's a nice Led Zeppelin.
And as we wind on down the road, our shadows taller than our soul, there walks a lady we all know who shines white light and wants to show how everything still turns to gold. And if you listen very hard, the tune will come to you at last when all are one and one is all, to be a rock and not to roll.
I love that. I love that poetry.
So the rock is the stillness. It's the same rock. It's the rock of ages.
Beautiful. You have chosen some lovely poetry and quotations for your book. You have back to that. Another chapter title is Pure Stillness. And I don't think we need to talk about that because we have talked about that. I do have confusion about the narrator I. Can you wrap up this conversation in the next few minutes, how I can relate to that?
The narrator I is like the radio narrator who might be narrating a ball game. And the narrator can be excited and, wow, look at him go, and, oh, and wow, that's the... But whatever the narrator says is not going to change the outcome of that game.
All right.
So the little narrator in the middle of the head that worries and frets and thinks about yesterday and rehearses its lines for the next conversation and all of that stuff, it's not going to change one thing. The same thing's going to happen, whether that narrator's going on or not. When the narrator's going on, it makes so much noise, it's like the sun shining in the daytime. You can't see the sky. You can't see the stars. You can't see out. So it's where all the attention is going. So if the narrator is quiet, if it's out of a job, just out of a job, nothing to do, it gets slowly goes away, then you see the depths of who you are. It's like looking up in the sky after the sun goes down, to see how infinite this universe is. And you see your own self in that same perspective.
Interesting. Well, his chapter on the narrator I describes it kind of like he's telling it to us. And I do encourage you folks who are listening to go out and get his book, because it's worth a read. I've read it once, and I've made a lot of notes to help us with this conversation today. And I'm going to read it some more, and I'm going to give it to some of my dear friends. This is about the end of the day in this conversation with John. He will be back on Tuesday, maybe every Tuesday, at least if he can wend his way from Northern Orange County down to Carrboro, working with Paul Nash talking with Paul Nagy at Tuesday noon, I believe it is.
That's correct.
And that's going to start tomorrow. I don't know what the name of the show is, but it's on this very same station, WCOM 103.5. And you can get it on the radio locally, or you can go to our website, worldwidecommunityradio.coop. Next week, we will have Chris Jostlin here. We're talking about something different. We're talking about programs or the public community meetings that have been encouraged by the new president-elect and his new Health and Human Services appointee, Tom Daschle, about health care, health needs, health insurance. And Chris Jostlin has hosted one of these meetings in which I participated last week. And we're going to talk about that and what we might want to expect as the new administration embarks on many, many projects before it gets snowed under by another crisis. So we hope we won't have another crisis. John, what's your final word for our audience?
Well, I wish everyone peace of mind. There are two ways. One is to surrender and have faith. The other is just to turn your attention around 180 degrees and have a look. And when you look, that little eye will vanish, and that which within which it arises and dissolves will be self-evident.
Thank you for your the time you spent with us today, for your conversation, and all the best to you and your new radio show here, and have a lovely time on your cruise, and we will plan to see you again.
Thank you, Bill.